This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. Frazier is traveling this week, so I have two special guest hosts that I'll introduce in just a moment. But before we begin, let's introduce our sponsors for tonight's show. First one is Shobi. It's an iPad app for paperless classrooms. Shobi makes it easy to assign, collect, and review student work, and to provide rich feedback with annotations, voice notes, and more. Secondly, we're sponsored by Jamp Software. They make the fine Casper suite that allows you to manage Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. And finally, we're sponsored by Geeks with Juniors. It's a website dedicated to helping parents and teachers discover the best educational children's apps on the App Store. More about these sponsors as the show goes on. So we have actually, you know, not just one special guest host, but we have two special guest hosts. The first one is probably the first, or maybe it's just the first or the second repeat guest. It's Rashan Richards. Rashan, how's it going?
I'm well. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Fantastic. I believe you were probably on one of the first maybe 10 episodes we did. We really kind of did a deep dive on Explain Everything. So glad to have you back. And we'll obviously link to that show in the show notes. And the second guest we have is Stephen Valentine. Stephen, how's it going?
Good, Bradley. Thanks for having me.
Did you go by Stephen or Steve?
Steve is fine.
Okay. So, Rashan, how is Explain Everything going? I know you guys kind of do, you know, seems to be consistently Twitter chatter about it, and a lot of people seem to be still be finding it and still be using it. How is that going for you guys?
Yeah, things have been pretty good. We're continuing to put a lot of our resources and time into making it better and more responsive and fit as a solution for more people. I think just today a new update came out, 2.5, which just features more like feature polishes or enhancements. Like, you know, we introduced an inspector tool maybe about a year ago. But as more people have asked for more features, we've actually had to redesign just the way that pop-out tool works. So it's been great to see the response, and we hope that people have appreciated our iterations and design revisions that we've made really based on people's requests and ideas.
How has iOS 8 kind of changed your focus at all? Have you guys started looking at those new APIs, or how is that going to affect the Explain Everything roadmap? Or if you can't comment, that's okay as well.
No, sure. There's some things, especially that they're introducing into iOS 8. For example, the extensions. It's just going to make it easier. You know, we've had a taste of it with the way that OpenIn works on iOS, but the extensions are really going to make that a much more integrated process and easier for developers to create hooks in and out of their apps. And for us, for Explain Everything, that's always kind of sat nicely in between a lot of different apps and workflows, it's just going to make it even that much better. So we're looking forward to that.
You know, iOS 8, I think it'd be one of those updates that when we see how apps can take advantage of it, I think there's a lot of opportunity for apps to charge again. And I don't know y'all's plans, but you know, you guys have given away free updates for years now, and it kind of, you know, iOS 8 seems to open up a whole lot of new possibilities that we never thought were possible, and a lot of those to me are worth paying for again.
Sure, I mean we've run into this problem before. Well, all right, we've been out for, you know, this summer it'll be 3 years. And there's certain things that we've wanted to rebuild or redo, you know, that we started 3 years ago that would be kind of hard to do it again. So we've always tinkered with the idea, well, could we do the kind of old model of software versioning where there was a version and then a new version and then both were kind of existing and supported. And then the feature set really depends on what your interests or needs are. So it's certainly been something that we've been throwing around. And I think we, you know, if it done delicately and well, I think it can work as long as you don't abandon the previous version or users. I think that's the key part.
Well, I think that's probably a very delicate balance in the education model too, because if you guys have sold, you know, through the managed distribution volume purchase program, if you sold people hundreds of copies of your app, and then 6 months later, you know, they're having to buy a new one because the old one's not even supported anymore. It won't run iOS 8 or it won't run iOS 9. That's a tough pill for those people to swallow.
Right. So you have to be very careful with the timing. So even when we did our big like version 2 update, which is probably around the time I was on your show the first time, we made sure to not do it just over the summer where people would make a decision to have the update and all of a sudden when the start of the school year starts, it's not necessarily the thing they signed up for before they broke. So we've actually intentionally tried to make the major updates happen in the middle of the year so that people have a chance to like explore and play around with it and then make the decision when they're starting to image devices. This is really not for like the individual consumer, but thinking about really huge deployments that are using imaging or carts or configurator-based deployments. We really don't want to disrupt their, not only just their device workflow, but like training and PD that they've already might have done towards a certain version or feature set.
Oh, totally agree. So I guess I really should have taken the time to introduce you guys, but and let you guys kind of tell a little about who you are. So Steve, why don't you go? Tell us who you are and you know where you work at, where you're from, and where we can find you on the internet.
Well, I currently work at a private school in New Jersey at an independent school, Montclair Kimberly Academy. And I'm the assistant head of the upper school at Montclair Kimberly. And I also work with leadership training within the school and teach English. I'm originally from New Jersey. And you might, I mean, in terms of where I live on the internet, mainly, you know, I blogged for years at a website called Refreshing Wednesday, but I've taken some time off from that recently to really focus on the writing I've been doing with Rashawn in terms of Leading Online. So now mostly I'm writing for the Leading Online blog and for the website that we've been building to support the book. And I've also written mostly for Independent School Magazine over the last 5 years. That's been where a lot of my print journalism has appeared. And other than that, I guess I can pass off to Rashawn.
Sure. So I, too, work at Montclair Kimberly Academy in New Jersey, where I'm the Director of Educational Technology. And then I also, this past year, have been teaching a course at Teachers College, Columbia University, on design thinking and educational technology. And then also, I'm one of the creators of the Explain Everything app, which I was on this podcast to talk about many months ago, and happy to provide the updates earlier in the show today.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that that episode is really close to being 2 years old. We're about to hit episode 100, and I can remember when we started the show, and it's. I always thought we'd run out of things to talk about, but I guess we haven't yet. The world keeps moving, so. The reason I wanted to have you guys on the show is to talk about a book that came out in January that you guys co-wrote called Leading Online. But before we kind of delve into that, I want to thank our first sponsor of the night. It is the fine folks at Jamp Software. Jamp Software provides IT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technology such as Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs in education organizations. They've got a great app for the iPad called Casper Focus that allows teachers from their iPad to completely kind of take control of their classroom with their students' iPads. It allows teachers to quickly gain students' attention, conduct secure exams within an app, select a specific Apple TV assigned to the class that can choose and distribute iBooks, and even initiate AirPlay right from within Casper Focus. Now, I'm actually a Jamp customer myself, so is Fraser. We love their mobile device management software. If you want to learn more about it, go to outofschool.net, go to episode 97. We've got a special URL in there, and that just lets the fine folks at Jamp know that you found out about them from our show. So thanks to Jamp Software for sponsoring the show this week. So tell me kind of about the inspiration for writing this book. You know, one of the things you know, mentioned to you guys before we started is everything that I write in some ways is to get it off my chest. You know, whether it's in my heart or what's in my head, I have to kind of get it out. So what's the inspiration for writing this book?
Well, Brad, I can get started. I think that most of the writing that I do is consistent with what you just said. It's something that I want to, you know, get off my chest or get out into the world. This book was a little bit different in that it was literally born on the New Jersey, on the parkway, when Rashaan and I were driving toward a conference where we were going to be presenting for just an hour on leading online. And as we were driving toward the conference, I think we both realized that, you know, we had a small slide deck and we had some things that we were going to be saying, but I think we both realized that the project was bigger than just one presentation, that we had put in some work and that there was more that we wanted to do. And again, we didn't realize it at the time, but Rashaan is obviously, you know, deeply knowledgeable about technology and the best way to use it in schools. And he also has, you know, a great perspective on leadership. I do have some technology in my background, but, you know, my specialty is really understanding how leadership works in schools. So I think partially we saw this as a game almost, where we would bring our perspectives, our point of view, which were both kind of different. We were coming from different orientations within schools, and see what would happen if we really tried to extend our conversation, and the conversation that really started in the car on our way to a conference.
Well, it's funny how when you have these projects that you think maybe have these grand beginnings, that they're, you know, again, it's in a car. Our show was started on Twitter. Nice. Fraser and I just started talking about it, and this is really before I knew him very well. He knew me very well, but we had just some conversations back and forth, and we had a Skype chat to talk about some things. I thought it might be nice to record it. And yeah, it's just, you know, leadership is one of those things that 3 years ago, I didn't, you know, I knew it was important in schools, but I didn't know how important. Yeah. And then as I've, you kind of been, you know, I've been in education for 5 years now. And as I've kind of sat back and watched, and I've talked to other schools and watched other schools, and you know, even for the good and the bad, everything, you know, kind of comes and goes with leadership. If, you know, you can have the best of intentions at the teaching level, at the technology level, at the finance office level, but if you have bad leadership in the school, it's going to fall apart, and you just can't make anything work without it. It all has to start with being a great leader and having great leadership at the top.
Sure. Sure.
So, you know, what was the process on actually writing the book? I mean, you know, you mentioned you started in the car. What were the next steps?
Let's see. So I think we first started with a single Google Doc, and we just started dumping in ideas, almost like a chapter heading ideas. And some of it was just complete nonsense. And some of it was directly tied to our slide deck. In fact, I think our slide deck headers were probably the first list of chapters in that first iteration. Actually, I'd probably like to go to the Google Doc to the revision history and see what it looked like on day one. It'd be pretty interesting. But so we started there, and we almost did like a Fight Club rule about this project, because, you know, we were both wanted to be very careful and ethical about, you know, not working on a side project during work time. So even if we ran into each other in the hallway or at lunch or at another meeting, really trying to be careful about that, but also to see how much of this can we do strictly online, even though we do see each other face to face fairly regularly. So we were really true to that process of just using the first virtual space, which was the Google Doc, to write and get ideas down, and then, you know, send each other an email or a note. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you wonder how many projects in like 2012 or maybe 2010 on would say it all started with a Google Doc.
Yeah.
Sure. I have to say, though, that one thing that Rashaan excels at and that, you know, I really enjoy is that he sets up rules that make writing and collaborating feel almost like a game. And I haven't quite been able to put it into words, but, you know, even if we're working in a Google Doc, you know, again, he'll set up a rule like the Fight Club rule, which is, you know, we're not going to talk about this during work hours or when we see each other. And so you end up having some constraints, which become very useful, especially when you have a busy job and a family like we all do. And you're trying to write, you know, in the off hours, you know, nights, weekends, mornings. And again, even the way he set up the Google Doc with headers or organizing parts of the document or setting up small constraints, it really helped me. And I'm a pretty disciplined writer, but it made it a different kind of writing experience for me. And there was almost no grind to it. It was a very pleasurable writing experience because it was a structured conversation. And even if we were going to meet outside of the writing, we were calling it leading offline. And so we would meet at night, you know, maybe once every 2 months, in increasingly kind of bizarre places to talk about the book and to see what would happen, you know, if we met at a diner on, you know, in a diner on Route 3, or, you know, somewhere like that. If we were talking about leadership and technology in a place where maybe no one else has in the history of the world. So,
you know, it's funny. I'm the same way with, you know, with writing and podcasting. You have this balance where I'm at my computer all day, but you don't want to steal time. And so it's one of those things. I might, you know, want to work on the show notes for this week. Well, I'll just wait till my lunch break. And you find these pockets of time, you have to become more disciplined with your kind of time management because, you know, 20 minutes, is very valuable to me. But you can also get a lot of writing done in 20 minutes if you just kind of sit down and focus. And if you have these structures, you know, that you know what you're working on, it's a set schedule, makes it a little easier to kind of work through that process.
I think another thing that helped is that we, Steve and I balance each other's strengths and weaknesses. So I actually dislike the writing experience very much. And at the time we were writing this book, I was also writing my dissertation. So it was double dislike of just the time and energy of, you know, I have a lot of thoughts in my head and typing it out and making it seem good. But what was amazing was I would write, you know, just absolute nonsense. But Steve understood what I was getting at and was able to turn it into, you know, amazing prose. So it was a really awesome experience to see like, oh, that is what I meant. But I've just never had the discipline or patience to actually try to, or even the skill to turn my written thoughts into something more.
No, I think that's probably the benefit of having a co-author situation is each of you have different strengths and you can kind of play to those strengths. You know, what was the process, you know, I guess, why did you end up an iBooks author?
Yeah, this was a tricky decision point because, you know, Steve has published books through more traditional routes before, and I hadn't done anything like that. I'd published some research papers in academic journals, but never a book or done the whole manuscript submission process. But from what Steve shared with me about that process, I also sounded like something I wasn't necessarily interested in doing, at least not this time around, and. You know, I had just attended one of Apple's Distinguished Educator Institutes, and there was a lot of conversation about iBooks author, and I learned a lot more. I really hadn't dived much into it, and I was like, you know what? This might be an interesting platform to try to write for because it does more or it affords more than what a print book or an EPUB might, even though I think both of those mediums – depending on the context, are totally valuable and probably the right medium for certain cases. But we knew that if there was an opportunity to do something, really this idea of like a networked book, it seemed like the iBooks format was really going to allow us to try some things that we hadn't necessarily seen before in a text.
I think that's iBooks author always to me, because I'm actually in the outlining stages of a new book, and it's one of those. It does eliminate you from Kindle, which is obviously the biggest bookstore, I guess, electronic bookstore in the world. But also, if you can do some very specific things in iBooks Author, and you feel like your audience is probably, you know, uses Macs, uses iPads, it allows you to kind of do much more. And I think, you know, I look to David Sparks, who we know as Mac Sparky, his field guide books. And
yeah,
it's great content. Absolutely. The writing is great. And it would be great on Kindle. The PDFs are great. But to me, the magic of it is how it feels like a next generation book, where it's like all that, you know, in between, where, you know, the Kindle app is largely just digital text, but iBooks Author books are the future in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, we really felt with this book, I mean, we could have published it as a paper bound book there. I mean, I think we probably could have done that with through some of our contacts, but we really wanted to be all in with this. If we were going to be writing about what leadership looks like online, we actually wanted to challenge ourselves to model the things we were talking about or to perform them. So it is kind of a performative version of a book. And, you know, we're pleased with the outcome. We do think that there are some people who are having a hard time reading it or finding it, which has been a learning experience for us. And certainly you see these pictures of schools buying boxes of books, and you realize, well, they can't necessarily do that with this, although we do have end arounds for that as well. But we really wanted to be all in and to try to do something that was authentically modeling its message.
Well, I think that's really the only way to go. If you're talking about, you know, kind of being in the forefront, you have to say, okay, if we want to talk about being on the forefront, let's be on the forefront of the publishing model. And again, you know, is iBooks Author perfect? Absolutely not. I would love to see an iPad version of it, but it's pretty good. I mean, you can get something on the store fairly quickly. I always tell people, if you can use Keynote, you can use iBooks Author.
Sure.
And I think the publishing process with iBooks Author, there is so much more individual and user control. Like Steve was sharing some of his experiences with just, you know, acquiring, you know, certain permission rights and cover design, illustrations, layout, all of those things. And it was really just up to us of how we wanted to do it. And it was nice to have that level of control. And then also, you know, the day that we submitted it to the iBook store, to see, you know, 4 days later, all of a sudden it's available in 51 countries around the world. And that's pretty amazing.
I want to talk about the publishing process here in just a second. Let's take a moment and thank our next sponsor of the night. It's Shobi. It's an iPad app for paperless classrooms. With Shobi, teachers can quickly and easily assign, collect, and review student work on their iPads, and then provide rich feedback to students by adding annotation, text notes, and voice notes directly onto the documents. Students can show their learning by submitting to Shobi from thousands of compatible iPad apps or completing assignments with Shobi's built-in tools. Shobi keeps everyone organized with individual student assignment folders, email, and push notifications. Now, Shobi Basic is completely free, and teachers can try it out with their students in just a few minutes. If you go to the show notes at adaschool.net for this episode, it's 97. They have a special URL that you can download it through that lets you know that you found out about the app through our show. Also, if you're a school administrator, you can buy Shobi Pro for 5 of your teachers, and that will give you an upgrade for an extra 5 teachers. So that's 10 total teachers and all their students on Shobi Pro for a full year for the price of 5. So visit shobi.com/out of school for details. shobi.com/out of school for details. Thanks to Shobi for sponsoring the show this week. You know, it's I've got one book on Kindle, and I've got 2 books on the iBook store, and it's kind of a different process. You know, you can actually get a book up very quickly on the Kindle store. You can publish updates very quickly. You know, the iTunes store, the iBook store is a little slower. You know, you mentioned it took 3 or 4 days to get it reviewed, and why it's slower, I don't know. But what did you guys have any issues with the first version? Any review problems, or was it basically you submitted and you're good to go?
I think we might have had one rejection because of the way we referred to it as an iBook. I always remembered in their in some of the documentation or the user agreement how you're not allowed to use certain words like iBook or iBook Store. And I think we had a sentence that mentioned that we'll be updating this book in the iBook store. Just the appearance of that text was an immediate red flag, but we reconciled that quickly, and then after that, it went through. So that was fortunate.
Yeah, it's always kind of terrifying when you see those rejections. I've been rejected, I think, once, but I've actually always been really impressed with the iBook store team. I actually called them once, and because I had a book that was stuck in review for a month, literally not waiting for review, but in review for a month. So I finally just called them, and like it was taken care of that day. Like, you know, you call them, a person picks up the phone. It's actually quite nice. Hmm. So, you know, moving on, tell me, you know, when you envision this book, who's it aimed at? I mean, is this aimed at the teacher wanting to become in administration? Is this aimed at the next generation administrators? Is this aimed at the administrator who's lost in this online world?
Well, I think all of the above, and I can't say that I necessarily had a particular audience in mind, in schools. I mean, certainly there are people that we wanted to shake up a little bit, and we felt that even if certain educational leaders flipped through the book, that they might get some new ideas that they could bring to work the next day. We also, you know, we were thinking about people who were interested in becoming next generation leaders. For them, we were hoping they were going to read every word and interact with us. And in fact, a lot of them have. And so there was sort of that incentive. But I also think we were writing to leaders outside of education in some ways. I mean, education is what we know. But we were also hoping to reach, you know, anyone mentioned in the book or anyone who's involved with organizational leadership in any way. And we've even talked about writing, you know, a next edition of the book where we don't talk about schools as much, because we do think that some of these principles can jump the fence from school, you know, into businesses. So, yeah, I mean, I realize that's... We haven't really segmented the market in any way. And Rashaan may have a different opinion on this.
No, I think that's accurate. I think the other thing that that we were very careful about was, you know, Brad, you mentioned before about how much you can do in the iBooks author platform. But we wanted to show a little bit of restraint on doing kind of overkill with the interactives, or, you know, some of the kind of tricks you can do with layouts and objects. We very much wanted it to feel like a book, so that somebody who is maybe, as you said, lost in this online world, isn't intimidated by a reading experience. But at the same time, as you start flipping through or diving deeper, starting to recognize that there are certain things built in that could only take place in this medium. And we wanted to be really clear about that. So that somebody who's trying to understand, like, well, what affordances does diving into being a little bit more networked outside of my school walls can start to scratch the surface on that question a little bit more.
You know, one of the things that I appreciate about y'all's approach, and it's really the approach that Fraser and I want to take with this show, is to try to, like, step back from the hype and look at the overall picture and the overall goals, and kind of try to examine the past and the present and the future together when it comes to technology, leadership, you know, how to navigate a digital world, you know, with schools, in regular business. And, you know, nothing kind of pains me more is when I go to a conference and I see session titles like "Top 25 Apps You Should Be Using in Your Classroom." That's not on the forefront of what we're talking about, because we don't need 25 apps. Those are just using apps to use apps. I want to talk to somebody about how they use Explain Everything to leverage digital tools in their classroom. Like, let's do deep dive on something. Let's talk about deep dive on Evernote. Let's talk about how you deployed this and you do professional development with teachers who are scared of technology. Like, I want those kind of conversations rather than conversations about apps that are free that have ads in them that are basically just we're playing games all day long. And so that's what I like about, you know, you guys are trying to take a step back, and it's like, because that's, you know, when you're looking, talking about leaders, they're not concerned with like games and apps. All those things are fine, but they're concerned about the vision and the leadership and how do we navigate, you know, our vision in this modern world.
Yeah, we definitely didn't want to be prescriptive or like say, you know, here are 10 things you can do to be a great online leader. We really wanted to frame it as here are some things that we're seeing and here's why we find them interesting, and really keep it simple like that, and let people start to apply what we see and share and interpret to a degree and apply it to their own context, because ultimately they're going to be the decision makers in whatever situation they're in.
Before we move on, let's thank our final sponsor of the night, and it's kind of a timely sponsor. It's Geeks with Juniors. Geeks with Juniors is a website dedicated to helping parents and teachers discover the best educational children's apps on the App Store. Every day, they publish a review of the latest and best apps for kids. Because the reviews are written from the perspective of a parent, an educator, and a developer, they provide insight that people who care for their children's education, like us, would appreciate. With the recent updates, you can now find guides for apps that suit kids from 1 to 5 years old. These guides are written out of their experience of reviewing thousands of apps. Learn more about what other great stuff you can find by visiting their website at geekswithjuniors.com/guides. If you have Twitter, they're also on Twitter at geekwithjunior. Again, that's geekswithjuniors.com/guides. We'll have a link to their website in the show notes. Talk to me about the network. You know, when you go to your website, which we'll have a link to that in the show notes, you scroll about halfway down and you see the network in bold. Talk to me about that.
We wanted to make sure that we didn't only frame two voices, just two people here, because we talk a lot about the importance of branching out and trying to find out other people's ideas or opinions, whether you're doing it passively by reading blogs or following somebody on Twitter, or more actively engaging in a conversation. And as Steve mentioned before about us modeling or performing the ideas expressed, we felt it was really important to bring in voices from other leaders or people who we find their, or whose work we found interesting. And, you know, the interesting part about that is that many of those people, Steve and I haven't even met in person, or even had a very intimate online relationship with. It was more people just we followed, and we reached out to them and said, hey, you know, we're working on this project. Would you be interested in being a part of it to this degree? And it was amazing to see some of that response. But some of the people, of course, were certainly in our networks, but it was a really cool balance. There's somebody who we met probably a month after the book released who had written, this is Kristen Swanson, and we met her at EduCon about a month after the book released, and it was like, hey, nice to meet you. It was really, really cool to have built something but not necessarily met the people in any sort of synchronous interaction until after it was done.
Yeah, you look through these people, and they all seem incredibly interesting. They're all kind of, it seems like, from all different kind of corners of, you know, the country. And, you know, and again, it goes back to, I like the approach you guys are taking of, it's a higher level discussion. It's not lower level talking about the hottest apps of the week. It's a, you know, let's talk about long-term leadership and long-term vision.
Yeah, and the other side of the network, the part that's largely invisible, is, you know, the people who have connected with us since the book has been published. And as you flip through it, you'll notice that at the end of every chapter, there's an opportunity to talk back to us just by clicking on, you know, one of the widgets. And that, for me as a writer, has been revelatory because, again, most of the writing I've done in my life, you know, you sit at your desk, you know, you spend hours crafting sentences, you send it to a publisher, maybe it gets edited, it shows up in print 3 months to a year later, and then nothing happens. You know, maybe you get an email, maybe you get invited to speak. But again, because of the iBook platform, writing has become networked in ways that, again, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, you know, you could imagine it happening, but to see it really happen where someone will write to you in the middle of their reading experience and start arguing with you, or they'll say, this is really great, or this is how I'm using this. It's hard to even think about going back to print or to non-networked writing. And so it's, you know, that's an argument I'm having with myself, you know, at the moment, you know, what do I do next?
And that's really the beauty of the modern world is, you know, you guys had this idea and you just do it and there's no one to say no.
Yeah. You know, this, part of that, the network conversation was also the artwork and the illustrations. You know, last summer I met this guy, Brad Ovenel Carter, and we literally just met. We didn't really spend much time together at this conference. But I'd seen his work and he was a really interesting guy who did these sketch notes, for conference presentations. And Steve and I were talking, as we were starting to think about how we wanted to put the book together. And I said, hey, what about seeing if this guy, Brad, would be interested in just reading the text and constructing a visual response with, you know, no direction, no edits, just give us what you got. And we shared the idea with him and he's like, oh, I'd love to do this. And it was really interesting how that came about. But, you know, without the network or being in certain places or reaching out or having those conversations, if we never asked him, you know, we probably would have just, you know, resorted to clip art and, you know, open source types of graphics. But instead we have these amazing, very personally crafted illustrations as a result of being in a network.
You know, we talk about networking and, you know, I always love to see those, you know, magazines or flyers, you know, how to network, or these articles, how to network, you know, in your city. And someone asked me the other day, you know, I've got, you know, given me 2 books and they've sold moderately well. They said, how did you get your name out there, get your books promoted? And I said, my friends just promoted them. And it's like, well, I don't have that many friends online. And it's like, well, I also have been on Twitter since 2008, meeting friends and making connections. And, you know, it's kind of like you go back to these old fashioned networks, networking, you know, kind of, techniques. You just be nice to people. And it's not about like what, you know, what can you do for me or what can I do for you? It's like, let's just be friends. And if you need something, let me know. If I need something, I'll let you know. And your friends will help you promote your stuff. And if you have questions, they'll help you and vice versa. You know, it's, I had somebody email me 2 weeks ago, ask me, a question about how we manage like parent email addresses. And I responded back within like 3 hours. And he responded back and said, you know, I appreciate you taking the time to respond back. You know, a few other people I emailed didn't even care to respond. You know, this was like a couple, you know, chains, you know, a couple replies later. And to me, it's so easy to just respond. I mean, I'm not that busy of a guy. I'm not that important of a guy. Like, cause you know, you never know. Like, I may need the product that he purchased later on, and I can ask him about how he deployed it. And it's just all about, like, kind of that creating that brain trust of, like, we all have different strengths and weaknesses and different viewpoints and different perspectives. And it's very helpful to kind of get to know other people outside of your sphere of influence.
Absolutely.
You know, you know, I'm obviously from, you know, the southern U.S., and it's known to be kind of a very conservative part of town. It's the Bible Belt, I guess you would say. But, like, I can follow people on Twitter and be friends with people on Twitter that maybe politically we don't always agree. Religiously we don't always agree. But doesn't mean we can't be friends and we can't still work together on projects. Just because, you know, we aren't exactly the same worldview and everything doesn't mean we can't be friends and kind of collaborate. And to me, that's one of the things the internet has kind of brought us, is the ability to connect with these people that we would have never had the opportunity even 10 to 15 years ago. So kind of as we look to kind of wrap up, really just kind of one side question. Do you guys like it or hate it that Apple doesn't provide you with up-to-date sales reports every day? Like, you have to wait till the next morning.
Oh, you mean like real-time stats?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it would be different depending on the, you know, the volume that we were selling. But, you know, we do all right with the daily reports. You know, I have through my my publisher account, I have two free books and one, and then this paid book. So it is interesting to see the contrast in the number of downloads of certain books that are free versus paid. It's an interesting market and ecosystem, but so far, just the fact that we've been able to do something and get it out there, we've been all right seeding our 30% of revenue. Wouldn't you say, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I always look at it, it's 30% of money I didn't have before.
That's right.
Yeah, I always, and I used to hate that Apple didn't provide like kind of live sales reports, and especially like when you have a big update, it would be nice to see. But in reality, it kind of removes that urge to check it because you know it's not updated. Now, when it's frustrating is when it's like noon the next day and it's still not been updated.
Well, right. Look, if you do the book through a traditional publisher, you're lucky if you can get 1 ounce of data. Like you can't get your hands on anything sometimes if you're not, you know, one of the top sellers. So this is, I don't know, hundreds of miles ahead of where, you know, just a regular print publication puts you.
Well, that's true. You know, since I've only ever published digitally, it's kind of like when my son complains that he's like, I want this iPad app, Dad. And I said, well, it doesn't exist. He's like, you don't understand why. It's like, you realize you have all these other apps. I mean, like, please tell me how hard your life is.
And yeah, I guess it's like the Louis C.K. Clip of him or somebody complaining that the Wi-Fi in the airplane goes out.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I guess he's only ever grown up, and when he was born, the iPad was already out. And so he only knows a world with the iPad in it and with Netflix and things like that. So, like, his worldview is different on things like that. And I'm sure mine is different as a digital, you know, kind of independent author than a print author. You know, if I have an idea for a book today, I could write it and publish it tomorrow. But, you know, if you want to do something in traditional print, you know, you're looking at, you know, 12 to 18 months to even get it in the stores if it's accepted.
Okay, well, here's another idea that Steve and I have been throwing around is you can publish something that's unfinished or unpolished with the promise of, oh, I'm going to continue to update and refine and add to this project. It's where that doesn't exist in print. Like you do all of that work and then only that kind of final draft is what gets put out. Whereas, you know, we could easily have just done like a chapter a month kind of thing and just kept building the book in real time as we were putting it together. And that's just not a reality or realistic possibility when dealing with just print.
You know, on the flip side, that's also a curse because, you know, I've got a very short, very inexpensive book on photo management on the Kindle store and on the iBook store. Well, that whole market continues to kind of shake up, you know, Everpick shuts down, then Dropbox buys Loom, then Apple's got new stuff. And so every time something new happens, people ask me, are you going to update the book? And you feel like you've got to update the book because you don't want like outdated information to be in the bookstore. It's kind of like, but you kind of want to be done with the book and you kind of just want it to be a standalone and be done, but you can't because you want to make new sales. It's almost like the books are apps in a way.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. It's tricky to make an evergreen book in any case, but now because updates are possible to a degree, people kind of expect it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as we wrap up, I don't want to keep you guys up too late. What, you know, if someone says, look, I don't enjoy reading that much. I'd love to get connected with you guys online, though. What's kind of like the too long, didn't read version of the book? Like, give me 2 to 3 sentences of what you want. What's your vision, I guess, for leading online?
I'll let you go first, Steve.
Yeah, I mean, first I would say it's not too long. It's only it's a 3-hour read. Would you say that, Rashawn?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of my wise guy response. and also you can just look at the pictures. But, you know, this morning I read this great article on Medium by a writer named Robin Sloan, and she was writing about Minecraft. And she said it really, really, really well toward the middle of the article. She said, we're in a new century now, and its hallmark is humans doing things together mostly on screens at scales unimaginable in earlier times. If that's true, you know, and I think that it is, then, you know, what Rashaan and I are arguing is that, you know, there needs to be leadership in that space, and it needs to be as deliberate and as intentional as leadership in an offline space, and that we need to be thinking about it as deliberately and as intentionally and as carefully. And once you start thinking about leadership online, it's endless, because you can always be working on something. That's my longer than two sentence response.
Well, I'll say I read the book. I think I read it in four or five days, but I just took my lunch break every day and just read it. And so everybody eats breakfast, you know, if you haven't read it, you know, we'll have a link to it in the show notes. Take the time. I think you'll really enjoy it. Rashaan, what is kind of like, do you have a vision, I guess a simplified vision of, you know, what you want someone to get out of the book if they didn't really want to take the time to read it?
In my position working with young people and the teachers of those young people, it's all about trying to recognize what shapes the tools take in different contexts. So with students, you know, we're trying to help them be good decision makers with technology when they're using it as a learning tool, but also as a social tool or as a recreational tool. And, you know, the tool itself is basically neutral. It's how it's realized in those contexts that where the meaning or the thing kind of happens. And so to the same degree, leaders have to recognize those shifting contexts and how the tools do afford different types of experiences. And it's up to the leader to kind of decide, well, you know, what is good or bad or effective or not effective in my context. And I think that's what the goal of the book is to do, to kind of frame these stories and these ideas around these shifting contexts and the way that tools take shape in those different places.
Again, I said this before, if you've not read the book, highly recommend it. It won't take long to read. And I think especially if you're kind of lost in the online world, I think it would be a great place to start. And then you can kind of, you know, further that conversation. Guys, I really appreciate you taking the time tonight to come on the show. You know, I know you guys are busy and have families, like we were talking about kids before the show started. You know, I really just really appreciate your time. Where can folks find you online? Are you guys on Twitter where people can follow you to kind of continue the conversation with you?
Sure. You can follow me at Rashaan Richards and also at @leading_online. And Steve?
I'm at SJ Valentine, and also tweet from the Leading Online account.
Well, we'll have a link to the website and the book in the show notes. And again, guys, I really appreciate you guys coming on the show, and we'll talk to you very soon.